tinfoil hat.
Oh, what the fuck are you guys even talking about?
Global controls will have to be imposed, and a world governing body will be created to enforce them.
Welcome to Tinfoil Hat. We go deep, homeboy. Eric, open your mind. Drink from the fountain of knowledge. There's lizard people everywhere. That's some interdimensional shit. Wake up, Aaron.
This is only the beginning.
Dude, you just blew my mind.
Are you ready to get your mind blown?
Yes, it will be. Shout out, everybody. Welcome to Tinfoil Hat. Join me as always, the man, the myth, the legend, XG, and the place to be. How are you?
I'm great. It's been a good weekend.
It's been a good week, and it's only getting better.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. We got a lot of amazing things coming up. The big 200 is coming, so get ready. We got a lineup of fire coming your way. Trust me on that one, homeboy. Real quick, on the ones and twos in the corners, our good friend Emma. How are you, Emma? Okay, that sounded great. The reason she's joining us, and we're always thankful that she's here, is that Aaron, who is a big part of the show, has lost his father. His father is no longer with us. So if you guys know Aaron on social media, he plays like kind of the doubter, what would you say? He's the skeptic on the show of skeptics. And he could use some love. So just tell him how much you love him and how thankful you are that, you know.
I can try my best to play skeptic for you.
Okay. No. It's fine. We don't need a skeptic here. Trust me. There's enough skepticism out there. That's Aaron's role. And we love him very much. And we send him nothing but love. And sorry about the loss of your father. A lot of amazing things are coming up. We're coming to the big 200. We have a lineup of fire coming, guys. Trust me on that one. So wait till you see today and on our Nothing But Killers. Nothing But Killers, okay? So get ready to rock. What else do we have here, dude? Dates are coming out.
Yeah.
We got some wonderful dates coming up. If you could post our date. There we go. We're getting into June, dude. So January 14th, we are at Plano, Texas. Tinfoil Hat, my man, XG, Reed Baker, Eddie Bravo, myself, live at Hyenas and Planos. We packed it out when it was just me, so I can't wait to see when the whole crew's there.
One more Mexican? Oh, shit.
Two more Mexicans, because Eddie didn't come last time with me.
Oh.
We're doubling down on Mexicans on this show, okay? So come out to that. Then we have the following night. We are in our home away from home, the one, the only secret group in Texas. That's right, Houston, Texas, home of the black strippers with the fucking donkey asses. Okay, they're going to be there. Come with us there. Go to you can get all these links here on samtripoli.com. Then at the end of June, we are at Skank Fest. That's right, we're doing Skank Fest in Brooklyn, June 20th. Through the 23rd, so you can go grab those passes. Then we have June 6th.
7 o'clock at the Rec Room. That's in Huntington Beach.
At Huntington Beach, those tickets are about to go up. It's going to be XG, Eddie Bravo, one more person on that show, myself. We're going to be doing that. And then we have the
Helium.
And this
Helium
is in
Comedy
August.
Club, that's in August.
We're coming to St. Louis Helium Club in August, and then we're doing Indianapolis on the next day. So those dates are coming up. Those tickets are live. I'm going to put them on samtripoli.com. You can get all those dates, and they will be in tinfoilhatpodcast.com as well. What else do we have to push?
We got the Patreons pushing.
Patreons pushing. If you love horribly bad what's it called? Public access shows. Join me, XG, as we have a wide range of just classic characters from the comic store. Come down, talk everything and anything. We talked Don Barris last night.
We talked about The Paul McCarthy theory.
Yeah, he doesn't believe in any of it.
No
flat earth, nothing. So that's fun.
It was fun. Great time.
Go to tinfoil.
Who showed up last time? Bobby Lee made a special guest appearance.
Bobby Lee's in it. We got some stuff. I mean, like, you name it. It's a who's who of the Comedy Store talking conspiracies or shitting on conspiracies. Tinfoilhattshirts.com. Go get those. Check those out. Those are Cooking with Gas. I promise you Loyal to the Foil will be up. I don't know why it's not up yet. It is supposed to be up, so go check that out. Go to the Patreon again, patreon.com/tinfoilhat. We're loading stuff up there all the time. He's going to start doing some stuff on there. We're going to bang it out. XG is going to have some videos on there, too. What else?
We got BetDSI. Sports coming in strong.
Yeah, I mean, dude, it is time. It's the finals. Baseball's cooking up. UFC, boxing, you name it. Women's sports everywhere. And you know how you like to make those bets on those lady sports.
World Cup's coming up from.
For women?
For women, yeah.
Are you excited about that?
A little bit.
All right, into that. So go to BetDSI. Use the promo code HAT100. And you will, whatever you deposit, they will double. Now, if you take that bonus, you have to gamble a certain amount of money to be able to pull out, okay, to pull your cash out. If you don't take the bonus, okay, you just get straight cash, homie, and you make your bet, you win, you can pull it right out. So figure that all out. Go to BetDSI, promo code HAT100, and support our friends. I do parlays for all the UFC fights coming on, so join me, and we love it. Today we're going to be discussing a book. Today's episode is 1984. We're discussing book 1984. But before we begin, we want to announce that June's book is Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Go see that. Get that book. And at the end of June, we will have somebody in there to talk about this, just like we're going to talk about 1984. Joining us, the man who looks like he could write a book on conspiracies. He's got one of the top podcasts. You know your podcast is doing well when your podcast appears in any top 100 list of another country, okay? He is a regular. He may have said that this might be a tie with Eddie Bravo for most appearances on Tin Foil Hat. He is entering the 5 special guest club. I think one more appearance after this, he's big in the pay. Please welcome from Those Conspiracy Guys, Gordon Rochford, everybody. How are you, buddy?
All right, boys. What's the crack?
What's the crack? That's what we're talking about. We're here.
It's real. It's real.
Talk. Do you got anything you want to push for our listeners?
I got my Patreon, I guess. I put all my season 1 episodes behind the Patreon wall because the audio is not good. I was getting a bunch of 1-star reviews going, why is this show so popular? The audio is shit.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I just had to move them back in. But anything you want to find out about me, thoseconspiracyguys.com. We got loads of stuff coming up. Check out the BitChute channel. And
do you guys do Gabe.com too? Are you on that? GAB.com?
Oh, a bit of Gab, yeah. I because there's no app on the phone, I find it difficult to regiment myself to go on and use it. Like, I use like Reddit and Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff on my phone, and Gab is not allowed to have. We're talking about censorship in 1984. Gab is not allowed to have an app in the Apple Store, and I have an iPhone, so you can't.
How funny is that? And what is the reason for that? Oh yeah, it's not CIA control.
Yeah, you're not allowed to talk about it though, Sam. Keep it under your hat, your tinfoil hat. It's
real very, quick, before we start. I forgot to announce that I have put both of my specials that I filmed, produced, directed. I didn't direct. I had legendary Wayne Isham directed. But that I produced out, and you can watch them both in their entirety, Armageddon and Zero Fucks, live for free on my YouTube. Go to youtube.com/SamTripley. Armageddon, Zero Fucks, both there for you for free to watch. So I want you to check it out, and please tell me how hard I rocked. How hard I rocked.
That's some very generous shit. When are you going to do your Netflix special? When are you getting one?
Whenever they fire everybody at Netflix who is making it so you have to be a bisexual, biracial person, you know? I told my manager to promote my special as an Armenian bisexual man, just to see if I could get both fucking genocide and hate crimes. I mean, that is a unicorn it, yeah. of oppression right there.
Victim status.
Right? I mean, I am a sacred victim.
Just get a deepfake done of you, like, sucking a salty bulb.
Yeah.
And just be like, this is the proof.
I was going to make, you know? I was going to make the art for the album, just me with a bunch of black dicks photoshopped all over myself. Just, you know, and just say, believe
like
in my
forest of cocks.
Yeah. That's how they call it, a forest of cocks. So Gordo, let's get into this book, 1984. It's written by George Orwell, way back in the day in 1949. I mean, if you guys joined us, and I hope you guys do, if you even got to catch up, you start reading this and you go, as you're reading this, you're like, oh, that sounds just like this. Oh, that sounds just like this. Oh, that sounds just like...
Yeah, the motherfucker was a time traveler, soothsayer, future maker. Like, it was... It's bananas how accurate it was for, like, what is it, 70-year-old book?
Yeah.
It's 70 this year, right?
And you got to understand something. Like, 1949 is really before we are...
Anything.
We are in this modern era of like black ops shit, you know, NASA, before everything, a lot of people say that the JFK, you know, my friend Corey, who is the booker on the show, talks about how JFK is the day we lose our country. Like that is the day that a shadow group comes in. So this is even before all that, you know, this is before all that. So,
like, there's a lot of people that are into conspiracy theories, and because World War One and World War Two now seem so far away, there's no real kind of like tangible evidence. There's no very few people left alive even that can look back and go, okay, this is a tangible thing that happened. These are the blueprints laid out for our future. And when you like, I'm doing a whole series in the upcoming seasons, like a whole 5 episodes all on World War One and the different conspiratorial aspects of it. Like World War One was not fought for some fucking, you know, mucky fields in France. You know, it was a pharmaceutical war. World War Two was an ideological war based around business and creating a war machine from the American government because they saw how much money they made from World War One. So like the motivations and stuff behind all this are so far in the past that people are, I guess, conspiracy theorists, it's hard to get stuff that's not like, you know, fucking History Channel, like Hitler's henchmen or some fairy tale Disney bullshit or some like, you know, Lifetime movie quality documentaries. People don't know what happened or how serious shit was. And I've gone through in those conspiracy guys, like I've done a whole series on like money and gold and the Federal Reserve and JP Morgan and, you know, the Knickerbocker stuff and taking like cornering the market and copper and taking over the whole monetary system of the United States. Like even to go back into the 17th, 18th century, how all that stuff was set up, like the entirety of how America runs today was decided between 1890 and 1910 or 1912.
Yep. And this is the long game they play. They play a long... Their goal is not to make it happen. It doesn't have to happen during their lifetime. It just has to happen. And if it happens after they pass, then so be it. It's this long, long, long game. And when you don't care when it happens, that's a very dangerous thing, because you don't make any let's hurry up, let's fast forward it thing going on.
Like the people who are doing all that stuff, like the Rockefellers, Rothschilds, Morgans, all of these guys, they got theirs. You know, you get your fucking pockets filled and your dick sucked in your own time. And what more can you expect? Like they're not going to know like it's trillions and trillions of dollars. They weren't doing it for themselves solely. There wasn't a selfish thing in it. It was like, I'm getting mine now. And I'm also setting it up so that other motherfuckers who work with me will get theirs then. And people will, like, it's an ideological maneuver over a long, long period of time. And people will look at George Orwell's writing and look at the stuff that he predicted in 1984 and Animal Farm and other writings and say, how the fuck did he know that that was going to happen now? So when we're looking back to 1949 from 2019, it's like longer than twice of our lifetimes.
Yeah.
There's so little tangible evidence we can't go and interview people who knew George Orwell. It's like, what was he? What did he really mean? We can't ask Orwell himself. We can't even ask Christopher Hitchens, who's like a massive Orwell student, who is like, talked on his writings, and he was kind of like the living Orwell on into the 90s and 2000s until he died, I think in 2011. Like, we can't even ask him, and he was one of the foremost students of Orwell's writing. So you can't, like, there's nothing tangible for us, and it seems like magic that Orwell came up with this stuff.
He died seven months after the book came out.
Yeah, he was right.
So there wasn't much
was
to ask him. We must have just nobody was reading it, really
right,
into
right,
it.
Right,
so
right,
like,
right. Let's get into him a little bit.
In 1949, he was way closer to that crazy turn of the century period than we are now. So we should trust him as like a conspiracy guy, an original conspiracy.
He's one of the OGs, dude.
OGs, man. Like him and Tesla and these kind of characters fighting against the system and showing it for what it is. He's like 40 years only after, like we look back on like the Gulf War, George Bush Sr.'s Gulf War, and we can see all the bullshit and all the evidence is there and all the news reports and TV, all that stuff. Like he was there for that when that shit happened at Jekyll Island, when the Federal Reserve and the IRS was created. He saw the foundations of a totalitarian society being made in his lifetime. And he wrote about it in 1949 and predicted it almost like perfectly.
And you watch these videos that are popping up of like, even after him, men from the mid 1950s, 1960s, doing videos like yelling and screaming about this is happening. And like they were billionaires and millionaires at that time saying, dude, we are getting sold out. And like, there's this kind of this thing going on, I feel like, in this country right now that if you're super rich, you are there's a sellout level to it. Like you have to kind of turn your head and turn your eye into some dark stuff. And like more and more you look at like these politicians, like who is the honest politician? Does anybody think any of these people represent like what they're really trying to say they are, which is a agent of chaos to the system, or are they just sold out? And we just like, this is where we're getting to. Like, we are like when women have to deal with men, how men sell them on the world just to get down their pants. And then when they get down their pants, they don't hear from them again. And it's like, that's why they go fucking nuts.
Yeah. So it's a weird allegory, but yeah, like I think people are a lot more cynical now when they speak to power. There is a certain element, and we all conspiracy people together, like we're all, you know, questioners, skeptics. We look at the actions of, say, like Pete Buttigieg. Is that how you say his name?
Sure.
We look at him and he's like, Mayor Pete. Yeah. And he goes on Fox.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'll tell you now what I think is this, and it's a wholesome soundbite that you can put on CNN or wherever. And I look like the guy from Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm wholesome. I'm good. I got my tie tight.
He looks like the kid from on the corner on the cover of Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah. Like, it's bananas how people will look at him and go, you're a totally fake motherfucker. Like, this is an act. And they're so cynical about how he behaves and how he portrays himself. It's like, no, there's no way he could be that wholesome.
I just did this show.
He has a collection of children's shoes in his basement. Yeah. I put money on it.
For you know, sure, dude.
This kind of stuff. People are so cynical now. But also, there's a lot of like victimhood. There's a lot of, false claims and all this kind of stuff. Because that's the social currency now. There's a certain element of doublethink and newspeak and all of these things we're going to talk about that George Orwell predicted in his book that are being used as tools of power. And when we see people online going like, that's racist, Islamophobic, homophobic.
You think people are more skeptic now? I think my own girlfriend watches MSNBC still. Like it comes home and I die it a little bit every time. I see it, and she falls asleep to it. So now it's in her dreams, and I try to. I'm like, I want to get. I told her today, I go, I want to get rid of cable. I don't want to have television anymore. I need to break her off of watching news, and to the point where I won't even be able to watch my sports just so she can't watch the news because I can't.
Does she believe it though, Sam? Does she? Is she going around going like
she's watching it?
You won't believe what happened in Iraq.
Yes,
today.
You do that. Like, I go, and then she starts. I go, they're lying. Well, what do you mean? You remember when they were saying that Russia was the Russian mob now was involved? And she's like, did you hear that the Russian mob was involved as well? I go, Dana, you're just like, I've caught my girlfriend just regurgitating like commercials back to me. Like, hey, did you hear about how 3 out of 4 people recommend this dentist? I'm like, what are you that's not inside scoop. You've just regurgitated a fucking commercial to me, man.
Yeah. Yo, but I think it's kind of. I mean, people my age, like millennials, none of us watch the news. And if you do, you might watch fucking Trevor Noah's a little clip of it, and you don't watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
So we're not more skeptic. We just don't watch.
Well, you're just you're not engaged.
Yeah, we're not even engaging anymore.
Has to have them freaking out.
Which is so weird because I'm engaged now because of Trump. If it wasn't that crazy, I didn't care before. Like George, but some of them don't even give a fuck. Sometimes be like, did you hear what Trump said? You follow Trump? I'm like, you don't follow Trump?
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Do you not give a fuck about what's going on?
Most
don't.
Of them don't even
they
know don't. Who the
but
vice
they follow Kim Kardashian
is.
And the Jenners and all that shit. They know what's going right. on with that.
But yeah, bro. Actually, the thing is, like, some people say that Trump is like the Kardashians for politically minded people, that he's just a distraction when there's a load of shit going on in the background that he has nothing to do with.
I mean, dude, and I can't agree more.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's the same. It's the you just have to qualify it. It's whatever context it comes in. If you know, Trump puts up a tweet, there's like CNN and 50,000 online journalists make a fucking ball of money because they write some article analyzing the syntax of his tweet. Like, if Trump wasn't tweeting, there'd be people out of jobs. CNN, I think, fired, what was it, 700 staffers, something like that? Maybe that number's wrong, but they fired a shitload of people last week. Vox had to get bought out $250 million from George Soros because they were about to, or Vice, because they were about to.
I talked that the other day to my friend. I was like, dude, Vice is, he goes, because we're pitching a show, he goes, you know, yes, I know you don't like him, but we should pitch maybe Vice. And I go, dude, nobody's watching that channel. He's like, you're crazy. $4 billion. They're worth $4 billion. I go, dude, they just took a $250 million loan to keep the lights on.
Yeah, it's get woke or broke, man. YouTube lost $70 billion. CNN's firing a bunch of people. Like, they're all hanging on. And then Alex Jones is fucking rubbing his massive, really bright red cock off everything because he's just making a fortune, even though he's banned off everything. Because people want to watch that. They don't want to watch CNN. So it's a choice of what media you imbibe. Some people like to just not be angered by, you know, Trump's whatever, you know. So they don't look at him,
I mean,
but they look at the Kardashians.
Your thoughts on Julian Assange right now?
Yeah. Like, there's so much stuff going on that nobody's looking at. And all you have to do, it's fucking propaganda 101. You just put up an item that is, like, exciting and distracting. And whatever is really going on is, like, you know, 0.01% of that, like. You'll never like, if they don't want you to know, you'll never know, kind of thing. But because people are getting their, they're deciding and disseminating where they get their own media from, it's a choice. It's their own personal choice where it comes from, you know.
Well, and yeah, this whole, it's echo chamber shit, right? People just want to hear what they want, what they
believe.
Yeah,
1984 philosophy is like the Orwellian philosophy. People are going on the news like, oh, we're living in an Orwellian dystopia. And I'm like, you guys are the one making that Orwellian dystopia because you want one unified narrative. You're saying that, like, people who support Trump, people who are conservative, they're creating like fucking Handmaid's Tale, or they're creating all these dystopian books, like. And the whole point of 1984 is that it's like an unflinching totalitarian ideological regime that limits thought, that unifies a message under one banner, and that if anyone steps out of line and thinks outside of that dogma, that you're the enemy of the people. And there's half of America thinks like that. And then the other half is going, you're bad people. They're classifying them as wrong thinkers rather than going, well, you can think that and exist, and I can think this and exist, and we can live in the same country. It's not like I'm vilifying you. You should be burned at the stake for believing what you believe. And it's the start of that 1984 mentality, which is everyone must believe the same thing. If you don't, you're wrong. I don't see a lot of people on the right saying the people on the left are incorrect. Maybe be around the abortion.
Gordo, I agree with you on a lot of stuff. I totally do. I don't think that's valid. I think you see it all the time. And the problem is right now in this last 3 years, it's been very Democratic heavy or liberal heavy in terms of the craziness. But in the early 2000s, it was weapons of mass destruction. It was Al-Qaeda. It was everywhere. And Fox News was beating that drum and getting the right.
It was a very Republican driven machine. Yeah, absolutely.
And now because, you know, what really upsets me about the conspiracy theory world is how when we've now labeled the deep state, it's very much Obama and Hillary heavy. Mm. And it's like, well, we need to start calling out the people who are involved with this just as much, which are the Bushes and the Cheneys and the Wolfowitz and the Rumsfelds who like initiated this. Like, I mean, like, dude, the Bushes were involved with the assassination of JFK, which kicks this whole thing in fucking gear. I mean, very heavy fuck. I mean, like, obviously, LBJ, I believe, was Democrat, and that goes back to the right versus left. But I get very nervous when we, because right now, we are the first time in the history where it's been left to right censorship. Yeah. Before that, it's always been right to left. And young conservatives don't, which is an oxymoron. But, you know, they don't remember book burning. You can't date this person out of your race. You can't get gay marriage, which we all accept right now as duh, right?
Yeah.
That was very much no, dude. There, I mean, do you watch interracial porn from the 70s? Those chicks were like laying it on the line, dude. They were like, dude, you're doing interracial. You're a white girl banging black guys in the 70s in porno. You had to leave your town. You had to move to another trailer park. You were not allowed because that was like your grandparents were rolling in their graves, you know, like your parents were shunned. Yeah, yeah. And it's just like...
Well, Brokeback Mountain. When Brokeback Mountain came out, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Some people bitched about it and complained. You put that movie out now, ain't no one going to say shit. Well, okay. Dude,
it's an award winner if you put it out now. Lads get a fucking... There's, you know, getting Golden Globes for that shit.
There is...
But it's an ideological virtue machine is what it is. So they're saying, like, I think conservatives have softened a lot over the last while, especially young conservatives, where... You know, they'll stick to the hard issues like abortion and gun control, free speech. But the rest of it is kind of like, be gay if you want. It's grand.
No, whereas in the 60s, it's like... It is that. There is that in terms of like when I tell people filth won the culture war. You go to these red states, they're swingers. They're all swingers. They abandoned the religious right. The religious right is the very extreme of the right. They have to court them a little bit to get their vote.
Yeah, but they're always the guys that are caught with like a fucking gimp in the basement then, right?
For sure. For sure.
In a trunk.
For sure.
But that's the thing. You're pushing so hard to one side or the other. And again, it's a 1984 paradigm where totalitarianism on the left or the right, and we'll talk about Orwell's history and how he fought for the communists against the fascists who were like, you know, right-wing ideologues and fanatics. Anybody who's on the extreme of any kind of ideological debate is kind of unflinching. It's an unwinnable war, and it's either destruction or assimilation. Far right or far left radicals in America right now will never, they're totally immovable. They will never change their ways. So they either disappear or be destroyed, or they win. And it's a zero-sum game that both sides of that, like, are never going to win. You know, the alt-right and then the anti-fa lads, like, they're in it to win it. Balls deep.
Like, yeah, because there's a paycheck involved. And that's the worst part, is that much of this is dealt with in hypocrisy. That's really what we find over and over. These people who go hard in the paint on the super right or the super left. And I've said this about the show. If I went hard either way, the show would be way bigger. If I was a super lefty or a super righty, this show would be bigger. But I don't believe that is the world. And the world, I just did this black conservative show called The Fallen State. And he's like, are you a Christian? I'm like, I'm not nobody's team, dude. I'm not on any fucking... I'm not a righty. I'm not a lefty. And it's like, that's a hard place to be because people want you to take pick a side and stick with it.
Yeah, that's because they want you to know. They want to know what to expect from you, and it's an Orwellian paradigm as well. Like they people want to know that there's no surprises coming. Like you won't come out and surprise me with some like weird decision that you're like, oh, I wasn't ready for that, or how do I react to that? It's the same in comedy, man. Do you ever find that people, if they know the jokes, that they laugh more? Like if you surprise someone with a brand new joke, they laugh, but they won't 100% get it, and they go away and they kind of mull it over. It's like Bert Kreischer with the machine story, you know, the Russian mob story.
Yeah, yeah,
like people
yeah.
People love that story.
That's his Freebird.
Yeah, he's told it a bunch of times, so they're like, oh, tell us again, and they know the bits where to laugh, and they know it's like fucking singing along to a chorus of a song that you know
like
really
Sweet
well.
Sweet Caroline. People Come on, it. Sing it. Yeah. Sing it. Yeah, my girlfriend gets so pissed. Like, yeah. I'm with you on that.
That's the way these ideologues are working. It's like, I want, if you wear the uniform of my beliefs, like a pussy hat or a black mask or whatever, or a fucking Make America Great Again hat, I know what you are. You're wearing the uniform of the thing you purport to be, and I know what to expect from you.
And
it's the same adulation or adoration for a uniform that you would have. The opposite would be the fear of when you're walking down the street and there's a bunch of like hooded youths on the corner, and they're walking and it's like, I don't know what to expect from these guys. Are they going to jump me? I'm going to cross the street. So it's the opposite of that fear, is that like, I feel like I belong because I know what you're going to say or think. I won't be challenged. And there's no stress there. And that's what the world of 1984 that George Orwell created was, a world that was made to have no type of stress for the powers of the elite.
And
the elite don't want to
have
stress.
Thinking. That's a big thing. Political correctness is about taking away thought process and having rules to words.
The ability to ask questions.
Yeah. I mean, like, if I went up on stage and just dropped an N-bomb, right? People would have, because I'm a white guy, they know their reaction to that. If it's a black guy, they have a reaction. There is it's like almost what they want to do now
preloaded reaction.
Yeah, it's almost like what they want to do with nurses. They don't want you to have doctors in the United States. They want nurses that just put in, here is his symptoms. Boom. Give him this drug. They don't want thinking anymore. They just want handout, handout, handout. Political correctness is, these are the rules that I am comfortable with, okay? And if we follow these rules, I will not be offended. I had one girl tell me, one of her favorite comics was this guy because he didn't offend anybody. Imagine thinking that was an important, I mean, she was hot, and you're like, you just knocked 3 points off your look. She went from a 9 to a 6 to a 5 by saying that you were upset people got offended.
Why do you care?
What do you care? What do you care? Nobody has it, but that's where we're at. So let's get into Orwell real quick.
Let's do it.
Real name is Eric Arthur Blair, and he was born in the British India, and he didn't really get any interaction with his father until he was nearly a teenager. His father worked go on.
He said it had an effect on him not having a father figure there later on in life, and he had like a kind of a sickly life all the way along. There's an important thing in somebody's thought processes where they feel like they're out of society if they don't have that nuclear family. And there's a lot of talk from people like Candace Owens now that are saying the black community and there's other ethnic minority communities that have this, where there's a nuclear family that has been destroyed, and these people are growing up disaffected, and it's a purposeful...
Yeah,
it's a purposeful action by the powers that be to keep the children of those non-nuclear families lacking or wanting, or there's something missing there.
Dysfunctional. I remember Jennifer Aniston having a video, a commercial where she says, you know what? I know I don't need a man to raise my kid. I'm like, wow, that's a really weird thing saying from a chick who isn't pregnant and very fucking rich. It was systematic. Like I said, I did this Fallen State thing, and he's like, well, didn't black people choose to do drugs? I go, like, dude, there was basically institutional racism done on purpose, the flooding of the neighborhoods with crack, to lock up the men. And it's like my theory on why does a woman who commits the same crime as a man get a lesser charge? And it is my belief that that is done on purpose because women have a shorter age time in which they could have children. So you have to have these women with felonies on them, 1, 2, 3, going out, having these kids who are born to felons who don't have a lot of economic opportunity, and now they're born with two strikes against them. And it's all that dark and that thought out.
So you think about Orwell like the early 20th century, like growing up without a father, that wasn't a time when that really happened, unless your dad like died in some mining accident or something like that. This was like a big effect on his life, and it had effects in how he saw the world, and added to the creation of this 1984 dystopia, which was like, what happens if society doesn't have a father? That's everybody is left in that undeveloped state.
Well,
because they weren't told or you know, it was just a little thing that I from my readings that I found.
No, for sure. I mean, I was the first generation of kids getting divorced. My parents didn't divorce so much later, but all my friends were, and it had crushing effects on them. Now,
yeah, and it's not really talked about because it's like normalized now, where you're like, yeah, it's grand, but like, there's a reason that it's there, and that's a very conservative viewpoint. It's like you got to have a mommy and a daddy.
Well, I'm always drugs. Like two parents. I have friends who went through foster. One of them's the biggest movie star of all of right now, and the other one is a very lost soul. And it's my whole theory is that if two gay parents want to adopt a child, that's more love for that kid than he would get in a foster system where, again, I keep saying this and people are going to tell me to shut up about it, but, you know, this whole pro-life thing, everyone's pro-life, but once that kid gets here, you don't really care because those kids go into foster and it is darkness in that child protective services. Darkness,
Wait, and it's not like you can just go adopt it either. It's a fucking process. They make you, like, you have to be outstanding parents. They ask your dog how you treat it.
It's a
fucking hassle to get
they disappear, they get kidnapped, thrown into sex trafficking, thrown into satanic sex.
They're the ones that end up in the mass shootings. Somehow they're the ones doing the mass shootings. They're all taking
pills. There's a darkness involved with that nobody ever wants to fucking talk about. You know, so
Orwell funneled
his
darkness into this world that we now are
living in.
We're talking about, but also like he predicted that we're living the world that he spawned from that trauma.
He could just see the future. His father worked in the opium department of the Indian Civil Service. That's so interesting. He's a opium department, and they produce opium for most of the world. And we did a whole thing on the British Indian Company, which basically created the power structure of the United States. We've talked about that, dude. All that opium money came in, and they just bought and controlled everything, dude.
Yeah,
he grew up
and subjugated like the entire East Asian continent by going like, here, China, here's a load of cheap heroin. Just everyone smoke it and just don't get as powerful as we think you can get if y'all keep fucking and having kids.
And that's why dealing drugs in China is a capital punishment, where you get put to death.
But they make them there.
What's that?
They make fentanyl stuff there.
That's
sending it over here.
But that is done as payback for what we did, what the British India Company did for them with opium, man. So Orwell grew up to be a police officer in Bermuda, Burma. My apologies. I'm going to hear that one forever. Burma, near where he's born. And he spends time observing the injustices resulting from occupation of Burma. Yeah, great power comes great responsibility. And unfortunately, bad people can be given power and they can abuse that like a motherfucker.
Yeah, it's called Myanmar now and it's under dictatorship. And there's fucking crazy human rights abuses going on. And like there's slavery and sex trafficking. And it's just all like, what the fuck are you going to do about it? Really insidious, dark shit. If you look up the history of Myanmar...
How do you spell that?
It's fucked. Myanmar. And Moro saw it happening. He's the revolutions was in that time in the like late 20s, and it's all kind of imperialistic post-colonial oppression, where Britain was still like the empire was shrinking. In the outer, like in Africa and all, like the Dutch and the French and all were kind of receding back from their late 19th century imperialistic endeavors, and England was still hanging on to India, and it was all like, and Hong Kong, it was like stiff upper lip, old chap, come on, we're going to have some tea now from India, and it was all, you know, tea on the lawn with crumpets, and there's fucking elephants and tigers and shit like walking around the garden, and you're like, such a quaint afternoon festival, like it's really surreal illusory imperialism, where they're just like, well, we're still here, so we might as well, you know, have slaves, and yeah, there's like some little int,
yeah, it's just, it's really sad,
on his hands and knees, footstool. I mean, like fucked up, man.
I mean, what we see US troops doing in these war countries, and how they're just blowing up like families. I'm like, with great power comes great responsibility, and sometimes stupid gets in there and does dumb shit. We lose like our humanity.
In that prison, that Iraqi prison camp where your one has a cigarette and she's like, look at this guy. What's that? What's the name of the prison? There was a prison camp.
Oh, Guantanamo?
Abu Ghraib.
Oh, yeah, Abu Ghraib, yeah.
So it was like war atrocities done there. It was like a joke. It's like, get them all naked and get them to make a human pyramid. It will take picked photographs as their arsehole. Like, yeah, that's what Americans did. But the English were way more refined. It was like, you know, we're just going to like drink tea and have crumpets and then use them as furniture and just sitting on like some Indian lad's back when he's on his hands and knees.
Unbelievable.
You're like, you fucking assholes, man.
Unbelievable, dude. He moved between London and Paris and was down and out for a lot of time. He fought against Franco in Spain and exposed him to the totalitarian rule up close. He professed himself a democratic socialist and a proponent of Trotsky's socialism. Am I right on that?
Yeah.
He wrote
Trotskyite socialism. Trotsky, Lenin, and Stalin were the trifecta of communist ideology in turn of the century Russia. So Leon Trotsky was a proponent of like total communism. He's like, communism won't work until everybody agrees, so we must forcefully make everybody agree. Whereas Stalinist communism was like, shore it in behind the walls of the Sovietsky Soyuz, the USSR, and let's block the world out and we'll just exist on our own. And Trotsky was like, that's not going to work, and it's going to end up in totalitarian rule with like a demigod for a leader. And they saw in Lenin, like Trotsky saw the rise of Lenin after the 1905 revolution, where he was basically made like this deity figurehead, like some god creature that all the kids in school would be like saying not prayers, because you weren't allowed to have religion, but like saying like speeches and shit. Like the kids in school would stand up and go, I love Dede Lenin. It's like Grandfather Lenin. I love Dede Lenin because he gives me my food at a heavy morning, and he gives my father job, and he make very good country for us live in. Thank you, Dede Lenin.
Yeah.
And everyone does like a speech about fucking, oh, I fucking love Lenin. Like, it was like, you know, the Pentecostal lads doing the fucking for Jesus. Like, these were these fucking Soviet Russians doing that. So when Stalin took over, he was like, I'm going to make like communism the best thing ever, but only on the surface, you know.
Did you read the book Animal Farm?
Yeah, that's
because it has to do with the pigs. Yeah. He uses the pigs as Stalin. Yeah, it's another book that's kind of like
Stalin, Trotsky.
We're gonna read that too.
So one was taken over from the other, and Trotsky ended up like fighting against Stalin, undermining him in front of the Russian people after Lenin died, and then Stalin had Trotsky assassinated with an ice pick to the head because he's like, I'm running it my way, bitch.
So did you ever hear that even though the CIA was informed at that point, but some sort of Western intelligence, OSS, deep state group kind of helped basically Lenin grow to power?
I definitely think that the Bolshevik Revolution in 1905 and then the that was to get rid of the royal family, and then the revolution in 1917 was definitely run by a westernized secret elite power. Absolutely. I was in St. Petersburg and I saw the Illuminati eye every fucking place. There was a museum exhibition that was like the writings of Lenin, right? And they were all translated in English, and I was able to read a little bit of Russian, but a lot of English translations. He was very heavily involved with Jesuits, with Freemasons, with fraternal orders. And I think that he was chosen as part of this, like, you know, Bolshevik uprising as a figurehead, that they had a plan to make him this, like, godlike figure.
Did he go to a school that I feel like other leaders were at? Is there a famous school where a bunch of, like, foreign leaders all went to and then later on went back to their countries? Have you ever heard any story like that?
I don't know off the top of my head. I have to look it up. My head's full of George Orwell right now. But we'll be definitely doing an episode on Lenin, like, and his auspicious rise to power. It's definitely suspicious. Like, why did they choose him? And he wasn't, you know, he was a good orator, but why was he chosen to be like the fucking Superman of the newly Soviet Russia? Very weird.
Let's get into some of the characters real quick. The main character, obviously, was Winston Smith. He lives in London on Airstrip 1, formerly England, and part of the Oceania, which is the U.S. and U.K., okay? He has
The world of 1984 is split into three sections. So it's Oceania, which is like the Western powers, Eurasia, which is Europe and Russia and parts of North Africa, and then East Asia, which is like India, China, Southeast Asia, and all of the archipelago north of Australia. So like there was three superpowers. So it's like China, Russia, and America, basically, which was the same at the time when the book was being written. Wow. And it was like a post-war division. So even back then, when China was like basically a third world country, millions were dying of starvation, Orwell was able to see China's going to be big trouble as soon as the fucking British stop poisoning them with opium.
Yeah. So basically our lead, Winston Smith, works at the Ministry of Truth and is tasked with editing and deleting contradictory evidence that the party wants changed. Just think about that, dude.
Yeah, that's his job. Like, if you watch the movie, there's a great visualization. John Hurt plays Winston in the 1984 movie, 1984, and he works in this little booth, and there's a tube, and the tube like shits out a little piece of paper, and he reads that, and he's like, oh, okay, this is the front of a newspaper. I have to like change the title, or I have to change some details in it, or as we'll talk about later on, he has to delete somebody or deperson somebody. So there's a picture of like a decorated war hero who has been caught with a prostitute, let's say. So that guy gets depersoned. So you have to delete him. So you stick a sticky white tape over his face, and then you pick a gallery from the gallery then of people who may have not existed. There was a machine that made up faces, and you just pick a face and you put that face on instead, and you say that's who that guy is, and the other guy is deleted from history. So they go through all of the old newspapers and they put a fucking sticker over his face and go, no, you don't exist anymore. Like, what the fuck does that sound like? You know what I mean? That's like, you know, Facebook, Google, Twitter, YouTube. Like, if you say the wrong thing, you're hashtag cancelled.
Or that sounds like if you come out with anything they don't want, they suicide you.
Yes, yeah.
You're erased from the right. Boom, bam, bam, bam. Now, he worked for the Administrator of Truth, and that dealt with news, entertainment, education, and art propaganda. Then the Ministry of Love deals with law and order, torture, and brainwashing. Okay, then there's the Ministry of Plenty, deals with economic affairs, and then there's the Ministry of Peace, which deals with war and defiance. Now, those are very interesting names, because you see that happen with the Patriot Act, right?
Yeah. Oh, they didn't ask us about that.
The Patriot Act is nothing to do with patriotism. They just put these names on there to sell them and what they want you to think they are, but they aren't really, okay?
Well, that's, yeah, it's all part of Newspeak. It's changing the parameters of a term to mean something else, you know?
Right? It's just, it's,
like looking at something that's really good, you're like, oh my God, that shit is da bomb.
Yeah.
It's like, what does a bomb do? It blows up and destroys. Yeah. But, you know?
Yeah.
Or like when a comic says, just, I killed.
Yeah. Well,
you, that sounds like a bad thing, but no, you fuck, that means you did good.
Yeah, yeah. You want to hear something really weird? On a side note, is that stand-up comedy is where doing good is considered better than doing great, okay? So if someone goes, hey man, great set, that means you did your job. If someone goes, good set, dude, that means you super crushed. And it's the only time you'll ever find good is better than great.
I never thought about it.
And then
like
if
that.
You do really, really well, it's like, that was the shit.
Yeah. 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 Right? It ends up
so
going,
the worst you do, killed. You're like,
yeah, you killed.
Oh, man. My special is terrible. You want to go check that shit out? It's absolutely awful.
I knew you for dude, I haven't seen you for a minute, which is like forever. Let's think about how stupid that is. So he works a minute, blah, blah, blah. Julia, then.
What about Julia?
Yeah, Julia is a young and vital girl who lives dangerously in the face of dogmatic rules of the party. She's attracted to Winston and seduces him, asking him to visit her in the country for a ride. He enjoys her company, and they share time in a room in London together. Julia betrays Winston eventually when they're caught for the thought crime. Oh, really? A woman throws him under the bus? Never heard that before.
He threw her under the bus first, to be fair.
Okay,
but, yeah,
okay.
You know.
So, point, ladies, book, I take it back. Well. I'm an asshole.
She seemed like a ride or die. She seemed like a ride or die. They would go out to the forest and have sex and stuff. She was willing to risk it all. She was the first one to give him a note.
Yeah.
But this is like a 21-year-old girl going after a 39-year-old man who looks kind of fucked up. Like, it's like, you know, a 39-year-old living in Soviet Russia looks about 68. Do you know what I mean? You wear the decisions of your life on your face, right?
Hard and times.
She's like 21 with like titties he could bounce pennies off, like, and she's like, oh, Winston. And I think she was attracted to his, like, he would go, Winston in the books, he'd go around and he'd talk to himself and he'd be very like deliberate. He wasn't like a sheep that the same way as the other people were, where they'd use the new speak and say like, oh, this was double plus good, all this kind of stuff. Like, Winston was his own man, and I think she was attracted to that. A lot of the Orwell analysts are saying that maybe Orwell, who was kind of old and sick at the time, was writing a fantasy where he's like, yeah, I'm fucking class and young ones want to fuck me because I have a great mind. It's like, yeah, dude, but you have a wrinkly dark skin dick.
Oh, you mean like every Judd Apatow movie where it's super it's nerd banging tens and everyone's like, that makes sense. And we fell for that for about 3 minutes. And then we're like, okay, enough of these nerd gets hot chick. The reason Big Bang Theory did well, which I don't really understand, was that they shit on nerds. The other ones are just like, nerds are cool. Nerds are sexy. Nerds get all the cool girl. And you're like, no, it's not real.
Shit on them, but they had that fine girl that was on the show.
What? Yeah.
The blonde?
Yeah.
So they shit on him, but he still won in the end.
Yeah, yeah, but that made fun of nerds. Like, the early 2000s, like, or the mid-2000s, was all, like, nerds are hot movement, where nerds are, like, beating everybody up, and they're, like, action.
Yeah, but who was writing those fucking shows, man? That was nerd porn. It was, like, written by nerds for nerds.
Yeah. And everyone laughed at, like, Superbad. We thought it was great. And then, like, when three more of those came out, we're like, okay, enough. You're trying to make a point here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I get it.
I was a fat teenager who didn't get laid. I totally identify with that. I know I'm not the only one, but the whole world is not full of that. There's loads of guys getting their dicks sucked. Come on. Yeah. Make something for everybody.
Trust
Inclusion.
Me, dude.
If there's a lot of sluts, I mean, they're sucking someone's dick.
Yeah. I hate the word sluts. They're just chicks who, thank God, love dicks. I mean, dude. You don't want a bunch of chicks out there hating dicks. Who wants that? You want Nanettes in the world? All the Nanettes running around with their bad comedy and their fucking your aunt's butt walking around? Now, in this world of Oceania, there are three classes: the upper class, inner party, the elite ruling the minority, making up 2% of the population. Which is interesting because what's playing in big now, the 1%. Okay.
Yeah.
The middle class is the outer party, who make up 13% of the population, which is, I feel like, in our world, those are the people who have a decent job and also are kind of like
content. They're content with
not
life.
Content. How would you say? I think they were just more like
upper middle class. Upper middle class. You own your home and you have a car that you don't have a note on, and you're able to afford to send your kids to a good school, and it's like, you know, upper middle class.
So how do you pronounce the lower class? Proletariat.
Proletariat, yeah.
Proletariats, who make up 85% of the population and represent the uneducated working class, which is most of Instagram.
And that's the way Soviet Russia was set up. There was a very high-level upper party, and they were the lads who were having fucking beluga caviar and, you know, fur coats and living in palaces. And then the next lads down were like lads who were powerful business owners and politicians and doctors and all the high up in society, and they got just as much cool shit, but they also were called on, like, you know, you owe me a favor, come to me on a day of my daughter's wedding. Like the upper party members would come to any of those cunts at any time and just be like, okay, I need you to come and perform an abortion on my mistress. And if you didn't do that shit, you were fucking brought out to the woods with a bag in your head. And then the proletariat are the lads who are like working at the coal mines, or fucking, you know, like they have a whole big shop, and they have like two loaves of bread and like one cheese string, and they're like, welcome to my shop, many things to buy and eat. And there's like a really hungry mouse just looking at you going like,
I agree with that. I think like we have the independent contractor class. I think these are the people who are either white collar or like independent people making their money right now in this economy. Yeah. They own their own shit. They own their own brand. They're doing their own thing. Then we have the 85%, which I think is Instagram. Like all the idiots on Instagram and YouTube, the
Facebook,
retards.
Facebook, too. Like don't leave them out.
But the Society of America is structured now very similar to Soviet Russia at its height, which was also its worst time. You know, the five-year plans all the way after World War II to try and get the economy and the industry, agriculture, back on track. Stalin had these five-year plans. He was also having purges, which was like anybody that fucking disagreed with him, he'd have some kangaroo court and pull you out and be like, what'd you say about me? I heard you say something. And like twiddling his mustache while there's motherfuckers chopping heads off, right? So like now you have a similar setup in America, where there's like a 1% ruling class. Then you have an elite, which are all the high-level businessmen. And like you said, like contractors, you have dot-com billionaires, you have, high-up like medicals, like CEOs and all of these like business suit fucking boardroom class level people who are millionaires. Even though they just have a job, they're still fucking millionaires, do you know? And then there's a proletariat of the rest of them. And that proletariat is getting bigger, because the generations that have been coming up for the last, like anyone that's under 35, even maybe under 40, those people are indentured servants to the system, because they're being born into a system where if they want to get educated, to get even a low-level job, they have to go into six figures of debt. So if you're already in debt, you might as well, you know what I mean? You're below zero.
We see that in doctors right now. We see that in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, man.
And saw that at the graduation.
Qualified, gone to college and got into loads of debt, and you're starting from below. Like because they can't sell you mortgages for the last 10 years, they're selling you a loan that you can't get away from even if you die, because they can't sell these mortgages. Mortgage is like French for like debt contract, so they can't even give you a mortgage now, because you don't have the earning potential to be able to get the mortgages to afford the massively high priced houses. Yeah. So what can you afford to get into debt for? College, which you need that degree to get the job, to be able to get the house, but you're already starting $100,000 less that than someone from 30 years ago. And that's creating a proletariat of people who are afraid to lose their job. They're afraid to speak out, because if you go on Twitter and you say, this shit is fucking bullshit, they'll complain to your boss and you lose your job.
Oh,
and
then I've seen it happen already, dude. I've seen it happen to my friend. He got a job and this woman in another department didn't even work in his department. Didn't even work with him. He's brand new. Saw a YouTube video of him and got him fired from his six-figure job.
What a cunt.
She was offended.
And it's unbelievable to me. And, dude, if you look at, like, let's take slavery in this country. Nobody ever wants to talk about slavery and who owned slaves. And it was tragic. It was dark. It was awful, period. Who owned slaves? The 1%. The Bill Gates of that time, okay? It wasn't everybody. Everybody didn't have a slave buddy, okay? My slave buddy.
A bunch of Democrats fought a war to keep them. That's the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Did you watch that? Death of a Nation? Did you watch that documentary?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
It's I can't remember the guy's name. Death of a Nation is basically like the history of like slavery from a really conservative point of view. It's like a Republican kind of made documentary, but it says, like, don't forget all that shit that people are going on about, like, that was Democrats did that shit, don't forget that shit,
for sure, for
it's basically juxtaposing the behavior of outright slavery to the policies of the modern Democratic Party, which is basically making indentured servants of the lower classes, which encompasses white people as well as black people and Hispanic people and all this. Like, the Democratic Party are putting in these socialist policies that will keep people indebted to the governmental power. You can't get out of that system. If you're on a universal income, if you fuck up, they'll just take away your income, and then you have less money than everybody else.
I can't believe how many people think that's a good idea.
People, I think it's a good idea, but if it's regulated properly, like, you can't just have
good luck on that
income.
dude, good luck.
You get put outside the fucking walls of Mega City One. If you fuck up, you're like, bye bye, you're gone.
Yeah,
you know?
Goodbye to that, dude. Hello, just permanent welfare, Kay.
Do you know how many people are gonna be working under the table? Give me my money, work on the table. Yeah, now you're making double. Sounds like a Mexican
actually
move.
Under the table for what, cash? Because there's not gonna be cash more, son. It's gonna be all digital.
It's,
and if you don't have a chip,
like,
in your
you're
hand,
gonna have a credit card.
How are we buying drugs?
Or sell?
Dude, how do you buy drugs? You need cash.
They'll legalize all the drugs by then. Right. If it's the state making it, coke, meth, heroin, all be legal because they'll be able to charge your card.
Am I going to go to a strip club, swipe my card? They're going to give me play money.
Why?
They're going to give me play money.
There's
so I still got to
no
throw something at them.
Strippers there.
Strippers are going to have an NFC chip in their butt cheeks, and you just swipe the card in between.
No,
and
those
take
are
going to
be
money
robots. Actual females won't be doing it. Why would they? Nobody strips because they want to. They strip because they need money. And if they got an,
I don't know. I know a couple strippers that like to strip.
Dude, if they took their money away, they would never be doing it. That's like, this is the fallacy between men.
Yeah.
Think girls want to get naked just for the love of the game. It's all dollars. I wouldn't show my dick unless it was a fucking paycheck. I don't know anyone would pay for this dick, but it was.
If you've been convinced by a stripper that she strips just purely for the love of stripping, that's the only stripper you ever need, man.
No, I guarantee you. George's house, we're hanging out. Stripper gets out of work, comes and dances on us for more. Knowing that we ain't gonna give her shit.
Yeah, but dude, do you understand that's within the, because one, George works there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If he DJs, if the DJ likes them more, like when I worked at a strip bar, dude, these gorgeous girls would date these troll managers because they thought it was power. And if they got power, they could do whatever they want there. So these girls come, they're like, hey, go do George. They like George. I'm not saying George, but they show up because they show George a good time, he's more likely to spin them a better song.
Yeah.
Give them better time. All right,
that makes sense.
Turn your fucking head when they're throwing hand jobs to fucking.
All right.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like free drink coupons at Red Lobster. If you get free drink coupons, you're going to buy a main course. You know what I'm saying?
Right? It's totally true, dude.
That's really objectifying women right there. They're like, free drink coupons. That's terrible.
No, just like... Then there's O'Brien. O'Brien is a member of the Inner Party, which is the top party, which is the 1% party, and is aware of the functions of control. He courts Winston as someone who has the potential for an inner party. He gives Winston a version of the News Dictionary of Newspeak to help us with his work, and then Winston is arrested. He tortures Winston into believing that 2 + 2 equals whatever. It doesn't matter. It is whatever the party says as members of the inner party who pose as members of the Brotherhood. That's so interesting. The counter-revolution resistance in order to deceive, trap, and capture Winston and Julia. O'Brien has a servant named Mark. So, dude, think about what that is, man. What do we talk about this on the show all the time? Controlled opposition.
Yeah, sleeper agents, man.
Oh,
people
God,
coming in,
dude,
people coming in
so
and being like,
smart,
"Oh yeah, you guys are a really popular conspiracy podcast. You know, do you want to? We'll sponsor you, like, and you can do this and do that. And then the next thing, you build up a whole business around yourself, and then there's a scandal, and then your funding gets cut, and then the whole thing falls apart because you have to fire everybody, and you look like a cunt.
Yeah,
like that happens all the time.
Yeah. Every time someone meets me, I'm like, okay, you're obviously involved in something. When is this? When's your lizard scales going to come out?
Yeah, but it's the fear of the executive, and that's why a lot of people are, I think, not succeeding as much as they could or should, because there's a lot of distrust. And I mean, I don't know, like, from the stories I've heard of the American comedy scene, it's probably the same as the Irish or English comedy scene. It's like every man for himself, and each man is his own business, and sometimes you have to be nice to dickheads to be able to get those gigs, and sometimes you genuinely enjoy somebody's company. But like, there's a lot of playing, there's a lot of games, there's a lot of wolves in sheep's clothing, there's a lot of...
I don't like playing the game. People don't realize that.
Well, that's how you get your Netflix special, right?
Some guy said to me, oh, someone told me that a friend of ours was talking about how my career is where it is because of drugs, right? Which is very funny, because somehow this drug act is making pretty good fucking money, right? But what they don't understand, because they don't know me, they never hung out with me, it's like, I just don't play the game. I never play the game. I don't say...
But you have to be reliable. That's the thing. There's a reliability that you need to have to go to that next level, that you're not like going to, you know, be on a world stage and then just be like... fucking lizards, like, you're not going to...
That's another thing. I don't want to do that. That's playing the game. That is giving them the, I call it, Nickelback comedy that they're looking for.
What is it you say when a comic asks me, what did I do? I'm like, look, you do what I did, or you do what the successful person do. You pick. You say that all the time. You're like, do you want to follow my path? Look where I'm... But
I just got a machete and I just walked through the fucking jungle to the top, trying to find where I want to go. Is he frozen? I don't know. There he is. Whoa, that was good. So, Gordo, this book talks about the dangers of totalitarianism, okay?
Totalitarianism. It's a long one.
There we go. What are the dangers, in your opinion?
Well, we've talked a lot about, like, the extremes of the radical left or radical right, or whatever political ideology you have. There's always a binary opposition when you're talking about ideological warfare. There's always someone on one side that are fighting against someone on the other side, and there's an irreconcilable, irrevocable gap between the two of you that no one can understand. We've seen totalitarian regimes, like, they've been the most famous conflicts in the history of humanity. The Nazis versus everybody else, for one. And you're looking at that going like, well, and I say this, you know, with tongue firmly in cheek, what was wrong with what the Nazis were doing? You know, as a thought experiment, right? And this is when we go on to talk about further Orwellian elements of the 1984 universe, like doublethink and newspeak and all this stuff. Like, look at what German ingenuity did.
Right.
Like, you made the Autobahn. You made
cars.
Like, massive advances in science and technology.
Pharmaceuticals.
Pharmaceutical innovation and all this kind of stuff. Like massive leaps in science and technology. Now, it was at the cost of a whole load of people's lives and all this kind of stuff. Now, to look at that on the whole, it's absolutely impossible to apply virtue to their actions. You cannot in any way say the Nazis weren't so bad. I mean, killing all the Jews and the gypsies and the disabled people and the gays and the blacks and all of that stuff, not cool. Autobahn, pretty fucking good. And it's still there today, right?
Well, so you can't,
Because of Newspeak, because of Doublethink, you are absolutely not allowed to attribute any virtue to anything that the Nazis did. Check this, catch this in your mouth, right? All the stuff that the Nazis learned, all the science, the scientists, the rocket technology, biological science from experimenting on Jews in concentration camps, all of the pharmaceutical advances, and all the secret mad shit that they were doing that was completely contravening like human rights accords and all this fucking Geneva shit. Like, you know, they were committing atrocities in the effort to further humanity. So all of the knowledge that they got, when the war was over, the Americans just went over and they were picking a football team like in high school. I'll have the tall one. I'll have the fat one. I'll have the one with the gammy eye. And they fucking gathered up hundreds of these fucking scientists. And the Russians did the same and just took all of their ill-gotten gains, their illicitly acquired knowledge, and just went, okay, you're bringing all of that shit you learned from cutting up Jews and bringing it into America, and we're just going to plug it into our system. And nobody talks about that because it came from the fruit of a poisonous tree.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, so, we talk about the death of Jews, and that is super tragic, the number, whatever you think that number is. But I mean, more Russians died stopping Nazism. That it's not even close. And that's why I don't even understand. It's like such an interesting thing. Khmer Rouge.
Like, why is the Khmer Rouge not talked about all the time? Because more people died in that than died in the Holocaust as members of the Jewish faith. Like, the people who died from famine in China in the, you know, at the turn of the century and again in the 40s and 50s, number in the almost hundreds of millions. Like, why is that thing the thing?
Because it is being, I mean, like, run,
this people who run the narrative want to make you feel that those actions were so abhorrent that they're absolutely not to be even considered or thought about. They become depersoned, deplatformed ideas. You're not even allowed to think or ruminate on the ethics behind it because, and the people that are telling you not to think about it are the ones that benefited from the most because they went over and took all the cunts and put them to work in America. So they're like, don't think about how powerful we got because we used all their shitty fucking actions
together. Oh, dude. I mean, what came from that Israel is a direct result of that. It's almost questionable whether that was the preferred outcome of that. And that itself will get you in trouble.
You're not even allowed to act. There's fucking groups like the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, are made specifically to bring legal cases.
Would you say that they are the thought police?
There's legal limits. They're not policing your thought. They're policing your
speech.
Well,
they are policing your thoughts if they pound you and make you a public enemy number one on the internet as you're a Holocaust denier. I mean, the truth of the matter is Israel does not recognize the Armenian genocide because that would mean that their genocide wasn't unique, and they refuse to admit it. Because that would mean that there's other people who've gone through some horrid shit.
Yeah, loads of people have for thousands of years. But I don't know why that specifically is chosen. I think the only thing I can think of is because they're the ones that are that have the majority of the power now, and they don't want anyone to ruminate or to meditate or investigate the source of that power, which was the adoption of a whole load of extremist far-right scientists into the American system.
It's just the truth. And it's just all tragedies against human beings should be looked upon as disgusting and sad. To power rank them And you go, okay, why are we doing that? And then you look at who is doing the power ranking and why they're putting it in the order that they are.
I think not the ADL more so. They wouldn't be top police. Their remit is very specifically defined. So if you're talking shit about Israel, you're not going to get a call from the ADL. You know, Israel are going to Palestinians. Hey, go away. Fuck off to back to where you don't come from.
Yeah.
If you deny the Holocaust or you start talking about some shit, like, they have a very specific remit. But I think Thought Police would be more like the Southern Poverty Law Center, who are a self-appointed hate speech demeritor. They're the ones that come out and go, okay, we have decided that that thing that you said, which has never been said before, it's a great idea, it's an original idea, but it oppresses a certain group of people, so it's hate speech, so you're gone, bye-bye. And the Southern Poverty Law Center are almost self-appointed. And people look to them to go, who's a hate group? So if somebody starts to push against their narrative or their agenda, they'll go, well, you're hate speech, and according to the rules, you're bye-bye.
Of course. They use it to cover up that you can't question them. There's no difference in Jesse Jackson's 90s, how he dealt with anybody who questioned black group's motives or a black person's motive. The first thing you would say is, you're a fucking racist. I mean, it was a fucking running joke on Saturday Night Live when they would do jokes about Real World from MTV. Is like, you know, there was a joke where like one of the black characters was like, she said put out the trash, but what we all know she meant is black people aren't equal. And you're like, that was the running joke. It was just like, when you don't want someone to question or you're out of an argument, it's a Hail Mary pass of accuse somebody of bigotry and hope they run away. Because for white people, there's always like, there's not a lot of words that white people get offended, especially men. You could call them almost anything you want, white guys, and they laugh, you know?
Yeah.
But one thing that people are sensitive about, which I'm not, because I know they're trying to just get to me, is calling somebody, a white person, a racist. If you call them a racist, they run. It is why political correctness.
To change the definition of what a racist is, that's been done in the last 10 years.
For sure.
So it's not somebody who discriminates against somebody else because of their ethnic background or their ethnicity. It's now turned into some kind of weird grievance studies power struggle. So it's like, racism only goes down in these rankings of who is the top race. So like, the people who go, you're a racist for saying that I'm less than you. And I'm thinking, like, that's coming from a person who has placed white people at the top of the racism spectrum.
For
so there's
sure.
black people that have gone, white people have it better than black people, so they can only be racist. We can't be racist up to them.
Yeah.
It's like, you're the ones that are classifying yourselves as less than white people in that scenario. Like,
think
why are you
about
doing that?
That, dude. Think about what you're saying there. It's like, you're saying that white people can't be racist because you're lower than them. You are
that's
feeding
bananas.
Into that. Without a doubt.
It's so self-effacing. Like,
without a doubt, man. Without a doubt.
But it's this double think, and that's a function of this 1984 world. It's like holding two opposing ideas in your head at the same time.
Punching up and punching down, Gordo.
Yeah,
I mean,
but it's double think is like, you're a racist. Why? Oh, because white people are better than black people. I think you'll find, sir, that you are the racist.
Sure.
Like, you know,
I think talk about that all the time. But punching up and punching down, like Chicago. Dude, do show in Chicago, a white woman will come up to you and complain to you about punching up and punching down. And what she's doing is straight up stereotyping you.
Yeah.
That you are white. That means you went to an Ivy League school. Your parents are fucking Fortune 500 people. You had it all made and you're just being a meanie at this point. And that says to me, you've lived around the wrong people for too long. Because if you live the right, if you travel the world.
You've been contaminated with privilege.
Yeah, that's why I said, if you get sensitive over jokes, I say it in my act, your life is going too well. It's working out. Because most people whose lives are dumpster fire don't care about jokes. Homeless
when
people don't
have,
give a fuck
when
about
you
jokes.
Have Cenk Unger on your show and talk about the Armenian genocide. I saw you had a, a show a little while ago about it.
Yeah, well, you know, after that show, he came out. I'm not saying because of that show, but I know because the genocide was that time. He got bombarded, yeah, and he had a look of a deer in his eye, and he goes, I think the Holocaust happened. And he said something very interesting, and I would give him points for that, which was he grew up Turkish, and they are told that that is not true. And he was just regurgitating. So this stance he had on not – okay. The woman on the show, it's she is lying through her teeth, okay? She's saying that conservatives are coming at her.
No, yeah. Anna Kasparian.
Yeah.
Is it?
Saying that it's not conservative. It's her own community. The Armenians are so upset with her because she – and they – listen, and think, if you know that's the name, if you know that's it, okay, you know the Holocaust, the genocide existed, get rid of the name. Get rid of the name. And don't tell me Young Turk is for liberal thinking. That's like a German dude walking around with swastika and telling you it's a Native American sign for peace. It's like, yeah, you don't get to use that, dude. You know? I mean, it's like, it's just the
welcome
truth.
Welcome to the Buddhist Sun Simple podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? So let's get into some stuff that he ended up predicting in this book that we've seen actually has come out and been real. And like became
he started off with the tools of totalitarianism, which is psychological manipulation. So it's overloading the mind with useless incantations and rituals.
Dumbing down of America.
Like the I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States. Like just getting the chant shit. Like another tool is monitoring and self censorship. We see that a lot online because if you say the wrong thing, you're fucking cancelled. And these use of telescreens and inter-party tattletalers who are, you know, listening, like earwig and listening around the corner. And if you say some shit, they're like, I'm going to fucking... And we see that on social media where people tweeted like, you know, 11 years ago and then they fucking can't present the Oscars because they said some shit that they might not believe anymore.
Let's go through this saying real quick. War is peace. Well, perpetual war. How many times you're like, man, they hate you because of your freedoms, man. You want sometimes freedom costs, and what it's gonna cost is your privacy, man. We
freedom
have
isn't
to have
free,
the,
man.
We have to wire. We have to fucking wiretap you so you can stay free. Right?
There's nothing to hide, nothing to lose, right? And with the 9/11 thing and the Patriot Act and the Patriot Act 2, Patriot Act Harder. I love the sequel. they said you have to get, like, told the American people, you have to give up your freedom for security. Yeah. You have to give up your independence if you want security. So it's for a country that was so based around freedom, the only thing that was going to get them to give it up was fear of death. Do you know? And that's all constitutional shit that a lot of people are like, no, you're not taking my freedom because it's the biggest thing. But freedom is slavery. The way those things are put forward by Orwell in the book, freedom is slavery is reframed so that it's the freedom to pursue your own desires. But in that is the original sin of succumbing to those base desires like sex and food and drugs. So it's like they're telling the people of Oceania, freedom is slavery. If we let you be free enough to make your own decisions, you're going to just be fucking all the time and you're going to end up fat and on cocaine.
Yeah.
Which is rare enough as
which
well.
Which I call 2005.
Yeah. You're just going to be, you know, indulging yourself in the baser pleasures of life. So we will take away your freedom to free you from the choice of making bad choices.
That's completely
like,
it.
That's fucked up. That's a fucked up mentality because they're like, we don't trust you to be able to make the right decisions for yourself. So we'll just make those decisions for you and they'll be the right ones.
I mean,
like, that's fucked up, man.
In this, they talk about how, like, they want only sex is only for procreation. What are we seeing right now in Alabama?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's.
But the Orwellian world, like, part of this 1984 new speak. Big Brother society is that the orgasm is almost like outlawed. They don't want people to be having sex because they want to be able to control the population, first of all, and then they want to be able to limit pleasure and limit people's decisions. You know the way, like, people do fucking stupid things to get the ride, do you know? They don't want people taking risks. They don't want people falling in love, because when there's two people in love and they're spending time with each other, they start talking about some shit and they're like, hey, did you ever feel that like life is unfair? It's like, yeah, oh my god, yeah. So like they think that taking away sex and the congress of physical contact further removes people. If you're in a sexual relationship with someone, obviously you trust them in some fashion. Right. I know it depends on how long you're having sex for, but like if you're a chick and you go home with some dude, you obviously trust him enough to not end up being his lampshade at some point. Like, yeah, you know that he's not going to fucking strangle you to death, or you roll the dice. But you will go into that because there's some element of trust. And as the sexual relationship goes further, you end up gaining more and more trust. So if you trust somebody, you're going to be able to tell them your innermost thoughts. Yeah. If you don't trust them, you're not going to be able to do that. And that's what Big Brother wants in this 1984 world, is for people not to be able to trust anybody to start some like questioning authority or some dissenting thoughts. They don't want anybody speaking ill of the party or of how society is. And if having sex means that you get personal relationships with people where you trust them, you will start in this dialogue and go, oh my god, I'm not the only one. I thought I was the only one, and you think that too. And then it fucking starts like a virus, and then other people start coming in, and they want you to think that everyone is a spy. Yeah. And that's how Soviet Russia was run. Soviet Russia had that thing, you know, you didn't know who was
they
listening.
They want you
the
to squeal on each other too.
They had agents everywhere, man. And the same in 1950s America. Like, if you fucked up, if you done some shit, they gave you the red card. They called you a communist. And yeah, it didn't have to be true. They just accused you of being a communist, and you were poisoned to society, and you weren't allowed to exist anymore. No one to do business with you. You were a Russian spy. You were a double agent.
Oh, what about this Louis C.K. stuff and this Me Too shit? No, no evidence. Just pure, like, believe the victim because they wouldn't lie. And then you just saw people getting taken out left and right. They talk about in the thing about children turning in their parents, like children hearing stuff. And what do we see on the news once in a while? Child calls 911 when dad buys weed, and everyone's like, "Ah!" And I'm like, "Fuck this kid, he's a snitch, man."
Of course. Yeah.
But they're being raised to be like that. Like, doublethink is the act of accepting two contradictory beliefs as correct. So you have to say 2 + 2 = 5. Why? Because it is. Does it equal 4? Yeah. Does it equal 5? Yeah. Depends on who's saying it, but yeah, it does. And to fully believe it. So if you extrapolate that out into, pedophilia is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Everyone can agree with that. Very few would disagree. Pedophilia is a bad thing. We shouldn't be sexualizing children, and men should not see children as sexual objects.
Right.
And then you have a YouTube channel where Desmond is amazing.
Yeah.
And he dresses up as a drag queen and does stripper shows for grown men.
Yeah.
And is very sexualized and talks about doing bumps of
ketamine
off his hand. And
wow.
Like, and people will fight for his right and the rights of his parents or guardians, whoever's minding them, to be able to do that and make that as a media.
Who is fighting for it? Are you sure? Or is that just bots doing that?
No, man. It's absolutely, people are fighting for his right to express himself like that. It's like, he's who he is and let him be like that. That is two contradictory thoughts, where grown men shouldn't fuck kids, but also you should allow this child to be a stripper and be sexualized in front of grown men.
Have, like, you seen where, when we talk Pizzagate, which kicks off a lot, for a lot of people really got in when the whole story of Pizzagate and Pedogate came out, and how you would talk to people and they would just be like, oh, it was debunked. And you're like, where? You're like, it was debunked. You're like, where's it been debunked? They're like, it's Snopes. Been debunked.
Snopes.
Nothing's debunked it. But what they do is they're constantly telling you
that pizza shop didn't even have a basement.
Yeah. Right? And it's just like, all you have to do is Rachel Maddow's crazy conspiracy theory's been debunked. But it hasn't, But people take that as, oh, it's been debunked, I can move on. The news speak over and over and over and over again. They hate your freedoms. ISIS is everywhere. White men are terrorists. Black men are cracked super predators. Whatever it is, gay men are molesting children. Mexicans want your jobs. They just tell you that over and over. And Muslims hate your freedom over and over and over. And people just say it. And they just regurgitate me. You're like, dude.
That's the propaganda part. Yeah, they lump these like sound bites and they lump these ideas on you again and again and again. But the double think is the Orwellian part of it. And that's where it gets really nuanced. Do you know? Like, the fact that it confuses rational people means you have to become irrational to be accepted, right? So, like, let's look at when Trump was inaugurated in early 2017, there was a woman's march. And there was so much doublethink inside of that little microcosm of society, right? So a whole lot of women went out to protest against Donald Trump because he said something about grabbing some pussy, right?
Right.
Whatever you like, girls, out you go.
Right.
It's your right to assemble. Right. They went out and had a big protest and they wore pink pussy hats.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what happened? Okay, we have a bunch of women who are fighting for women's rights. Can't deny it. Great thing. Go do it. Whatever you want. And then on the other side, you're like, but in your protest, you wore pink hats and not everybody has pink vaginas. So you're automatically discounting all the black women from your protest. And they all went, you're not allowed to wear pink hats anymore, even though you represent me. So it's like, you hear this term, the left is eating itself. It's because there's so much doublethink inside of the ideologies there.
That's done that on it purpose.
It doesn't gel with rational people, so you have to become irrational to accept it, which puts you into a state of manipulatability. You are going to be, your thoughts are going to be malleable. If you then, like a Baptist in the river, hold your nose and just go under the water of their beliefs, you're in all the way. Whatever they say goes. And if they change the narrative halfway through, you're like, well, I'm too far in now to, whatever you say is the thing. Like, there was women at the Women's March that were defending and supporting radical Islam. And radical Islam is one of the most anti-women ideologies that there is. Like, they subjugate women. There's female genital mutilation. They don't let women have any rights or to drive or do anything in Saudi Arabia. Like, a bunch of women who are feminists who are like women's empowerment, great idea to have. They hold a completely contradictory ideology in their head where they're like, we have to defend Islam. That's a double think. And it's to people, like, you say that to a radical feminist or even any feminist and go like, you know that there's like 40-year-old women shaving 11-year-old girls' clitorises off as part of like a religious ritual that's totally accepted. And it's, you know.
It's true, dude. It's like, true. There's so much fine print to everything. I mean, there's fine print.
Well, we are fucking cutting penises off here. Like, the hood, that's the same thing. It might not be, but it's it
genital
is.
Mutilation.
It is.
No, I mean, cutting guys' foreskins off is genital mutilation, for sure.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to talk about that.
No.
What about fake news, man? We see this stuff in 1984. Oh, we've destroyed Eurasia's troops. Or they're cutting the heads of babies off. Like, you know, it's so funny because, like, we heard about how North Korea was saying that Americans eat children. And that was really, really energizing the base of North Korea to hate Americans. Well, I hate to tell you, we did that too. And it's so bad that the CIA got busted spending $500 million. They gave $500 million to a British PR firm to make fake beheading videos that the United States media ran with, telling you that these people were cutting off the heads of people out there. And you wanted to believe that. And you believe that this guy is gassing his thing. When more and more evidence comes out, it's not true. And how just everyone's like, but he's gassing his people. They're eating their pets. Didn't we hear that about Venezuela? They're eating their pets, man.
Happened in Syria with the Assads, Daddy Assad and Bashar Assad, where they had the white helmets, where they were like, this lad is after gassing his own people. We have to go into Syria and liberate them,
yep.
give them more freedom or whatever. The very famous line from 1984 is like, we were always at war with Eurasia. We were always at war with East Asia. Where halfway through the book, the Western powers are fighting against like the Russians. And then at some point, it flips and they start fighting East Asia. And it's like, we were always at war with East Asia. Eurasia is our ally.
Yeah.
And it's just like they're changing the enemy. To me, I feel that there wasn't even a war at all. And the Ministry of Peace was just throwing out propaganda. There was nobody actually fighting or dying. And they were just using all fucking special effects to create these war scenes to keep people...
Wag the dog.
That's the thing, you see. Freedom is slavery. War is peace is the other thing from 1984. And war is peace. The philosophy behind it is that a nation that is a constant war, it means that the individuals are motivated to ignore their own discontent in their own lives. If the country is at war, you're like, oh, well, we're just going to have to band together and, you know, wait out the storm. And you're coming from, like, George Orwell, who lived through World War II. And in England, there was this stiff upper lip, you know, oh, Jerry's flying over the plane. Everybody, turn out your lights. And it was like, we only have... an eighth of an ounce of butter for that week, and you were willing to suffer because your country was at war fighting a good fight, a moral righteous fight. You were willing to be on rations, you were willing to fucking, you know, go and volunteer for the military, you were willing to sacrifice your own discontent to have peace in your own house.
You know what, so I find what interesting
they
about
they make up fake wars,
yeah.
foreign so that you will appreciate your life at home more.
What did they say the World War II? What did they say that the royal family did during World War II? As they're bombing the fuck out of London, where were the royals? Who, like, now we start talking about Jesuits. Like,
I thought did they not go to Balmoral? Is that the, there's a Scottish, did the Queen and King and Queen not go to Balmoral?
I don't know. That's what I want to know. It's like, you know, we have all these pictures of the Vatican hanging out with Nazis. The whole theory the Jesuits run everything. The Pope
during World War II was harboring Nazis. Yeah.
Yeah.
We did that. We have an episode on the Vatican, and there's one lad, he has like, there's a whole section of the accounts, basically, and the visitor's book for the Vatican is unavailable to see for the public because it's like full of Nazis, and they sent them all on what's called the rat lines, I think it's called, where all the Nazis escaped from Germany and went to Rome and said, help us, Pope, we need to get away. And the Pope is like, I'm not gonna help you, you get in this boat, they bring you to Argentina and no one will fuck with you no more.
Yeah.
And they put them in boats.
Hitler
and
was
sent them
one
to
of them
America, man.
Hitler died in Argentina. I mean, when we talk about that England fought a righteous fight, to them it was a righteous fight, but to the power people, it was another banker war. It was a way to destroy Europe as a power player to allow America to kind of take the lead in the world. And now it was this new world in which they didn't have all these old fucking laws and different, like, you know, didn't have France, Spain, all these different, you know, countries with their own set of rules. You have one giant country, which they had all their fucking knives into, and now they could control it. And what we see is they've turned our military into stormtroopers. And, you know, going back to the newspeak and pounding it over and over again. I mean, how many times do we see, join the military? I don't know how much U.S. sporting events you watch, but it's all, dude, I did shrooms at the World Series, and the thing I tripped out was how militarized that game is. Every moment is a dedication to a military person or why poor people should join the military.
Yep.
It's good money and they send you to college, right? It's the Ministry of Peace, you know, they're pushing you towards that thing because you're fighting for your God-given right as an American, which is freedom and liberty and all of these other buzzwords. But the thing with Newspeak, if you want to get into that, Orwell created this language of Newspeak, which takes away the nuance in language, right? So, like, Newspeak words, the way they're organized, there's unnecessary contradictions in the language are removed. So there's no such thing as, like, in Orwell's world, there's no such thing as good and bad. It's good and ungood. Because if something is bad, you have to reclassify it and go, is that thing a bad thing? It's like, well, what is bad and how many levels of bad? It's not that bad.
Yeah.
But if it's a binary state of being either good or ungood, if it's not good, then it's nothing. It's not like good and bad. It's like, yeah, I don't mind a bit of bad. It's like only good is allowed and ungood is absolutely not allowed. So there's no gray, there's no gradient in the levels of classification. And it's the goalposts can change at any point. So it like does. what's good becomes wider and narrower depending on what you're talking about. And the way Newspeak was arranged, like it's a language that the party invented to control this extension of doublethink. So in order for people to understand and accept two contradictory thoughts or ideologies at the same time, 2 + 2 = 5 or 4, whichever, they have to make a language around that so that you can't have the vocabulary to question it. You're thinking in the Newspeak, so you can't think. You can't even like think using a language that will question how things are, right? So like doublethink, like the Newspeak is the building blocks of propaganda, and these terms can change at any point, and these are the guys that are creating it. So in the book you hear Winston gets stung by O'Brien. Winston is a very kind of fastidious worker, and he's doing loads of great work, and O'Brien comes to him and he's like, well, Winston, I see you're doing great work at the Ministry of Truth, and I see you've made a few mistakes with your corrections. Have you got the 10th version of the Newspeak dictionary? It's brand new. And Winston is like, I don't have it. You know, he's like, well, I have one in my quarters. Call to my quarters after you've finished work, and I'll give you this new version. And he gives him the version, and when he brings it home, O'Brien is kind of pretending to be like a secret agent who's kind of against the party. And when Winston starts opening up the pages of this dictionary, he finds on the inside of the pages, there's a book called The Theory of Oligarchical Collectivism, which is basically like, this is how you rule the world. it's like the fucking Illuminati handbook is on the inner pages of this dictionary. And Winston finds it and he's like, oh my God, O'Brien is a fucking sleeper agent. So in order to get all the stuff out of this Newspeak dictionary, Winston has to like learn all of these new terms. And the ability to remove those words is in his hands when he has that dictionary. So there's different words that now people use. We can see Newspeak being injected into our society with stop words or with like no bad words, like Islamophobia. If you say anything against Islam, you're Islamophobic. If you question Desmond is amazing, you're homophobic.
Yeah,
you know, and that paints you with a certain ideology. There's a weight behind that term. Everyone knows the history of that term. We talked about racist earlier on and how that's changed from being, I just don't like that race, to this is power. It's not even about what color your skin is. It's like, I have power over you.
And then
you have,
and then on top of what you're talking about is the dumbing down of America. And it's not that we're dumber. It's my opinion, we're not dumber. We are just oversaturated with useless knowledge. Like, Russian peasants of the 1500s didn't have to worry about half this shit on Instagram and
television. There's no cunt going to worry about politics when he hasn't got any dinner.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you fucking got them Miss Meal cramps and shit, you're not going to be thinking about, like, fucking the patriarchy. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's ways to control people, and sometimes, you know, North Korea has their people starving.
Well, I also think the more you have, the less you worry. Like, you know, it's almost like if you got belly full of food and you got your iPhone and it's got Instagram and you're looking at all this hot ass and, you know,
freedom is slavery.
So
if you have the freedom to have an iPhone and watch Kardashians and eat junk food,
you're worried about like what's going on with Kanye, what's going on with this and the Mueller report and the fucking Trump's a white hat and, you know,
you can see the ideology of freedom and slavery in the way like some vegans proselytize about veganism. Not, they don't come up and go like, come here, you know what, it's better for you if you just eat like vegetables and don't be eating like eggs or chicken or beef. But instead, they fucking hold up like pictures of abattoirs and go, "You're a murderer because you eat beef, you fucking asshole." Like, that's that double think. That's that propaganda where they're pushing their agenda on you and making, they're changing the rules to make you be an awful person because of their beliefs. And that's just how this, like, that's why people say that's so Orwellian. It's because it's a double think, do you know?
Yeah.
Here's a really good example of how newspeak works. To, like you said, dumb down the language, right? So the conjugation of verbs in newspeak in this Orwell world is not needed, right? There are no superlatives, but the just an increase in the root word. So something that's good is just good. Something that's better is plus good. Uh-huh. And something that's best is double plus good. So there's no nuance. There's no gray. It's not like, that's very good. Well, how very is very? The other way, people are like,
we see that with Starbucks cups, right?
yeah.
Venti is large, super. Trente is diabetes, whatever it is. It's just like, there's no smalls anymore. Nope. The medium, what would be normally a large is the small, but everything is like mega.
And you go there and so you tell them you want a large and they look at you like you're fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Do you want the venti or do you want the grand? It's like, you know what I fucking want.
Yeah, the one side they want to, I want that. You mean the venti? No, I mean the large.
Yeah.
So this reclassification of superlative words, like in our society, is done by like, oh, that's amazing because you turned up with like three extra chicken tenders.
Yeah.
Or like, oh my God, you're a genius. It's like, I just install Instagram on your phone. Yeah, but I couldn't do that. You're a genius. Like, I think you're diluting the value of the word genius. So it's these kind of dilutions of superlatives. So good is good, better is plus good, best is double plus good. So it's just different versions of good, right? And it simplifies the language and it takes away the nuance. So it reduces the need to think about relative and qualifying terms so people think less, so they're less likely to question stuff. And then
you also see that, though, Gordo, with the fact that, you know, it's like there's always a new term, and a new term is meant to make kids feel like they're doing something and to make old people feel like they're old and they're, oh, we got to keep up with the young people.
It's their secret
language. And I'm like, Stan, fuck young people. They ain't paying for shit. The only thing they bring in is ass, and that's the only reason we put up with them, okay? So it's like, fuck you and your stupid new terms that mean nothing. Yeah. You're just doing it for the sake of it's like Molly. Oh, I'm taking Molly. No, you're taking ecstasy, dude. We were doing X way back in the day. Stop renaming our shit.
There's nothing new under the sun.
You just want to feel like you're cool.
The new word that they have now is stan. It's like, oh my God, I totally stan you. Like, I don't understand that properly. Is that supposed to be like stan from the Eminem song? It's like,
that's
I'm a super
what it
fan.
Is. It's exactly what it is. It's they stand you. That's crazy. They like ghosted you, but.
Oh, is that it? Like, or I understand you. I stand you.
That's a 15-year-old song.
I don't know.
No, it's like stan.
Now you got me thinking.
Like, I stand you. It's like, oh, I get you. I don't even know.
No, it's Stan, S-T-A-N, like the song by Eminem, who's like a super fan, who's like, I locked my girlfriend in the car and you never wrote back to me.
Oh, yeah.
That's a word now. People are like, oh my God, I totally stan that Tinfoil Hat podcast.
But
like,
here's my whole thing on that, dude. That stuff is, I honestly believe, is all think tank shit. Think tanks come up with this. So, like, remember when they were like, women make 70 cents on the dollars, men, and that just spread like wildfire. Well, they had to come up with a way to make white women feel like they were being oppressed. Because if
give them sound bites to repeat, like,
yeah. So if they sit there and they were just pounding on all white women, all white people, including women, white women in America buy more shit than anybody else. They have more disposable income than everybody. So if they're just demonizing all white people, in particular women, okay, no one would buy any of their products on
We have to extricate the women from the judgment circle.
Yes. So we have to make them feel like, so that's how women get, white chicks get included in fucking diversity showcase.
That's why they come up with the term soccer moms, but from some election campaign where they were like, this is how we'll win the election. We have to reach out to the soccer moms, the minivan owners, because they're the ones that make decisions for the household. We have to appeal to them in our policies.
Yeah.
And they'll vote.
It's all psychological warfare, dude. And
so for this new speak, check this out, right? So it's this like Idiocracy levels of fucking bullshit, right? Did you ever watch that movie, Idiocracy?
Oh, I love it.
Can't talk, I'm baiting. So they put, in Newspeak, Orwell invented a load of suffixes. So they put full, they put ed, and they put wise. So like wasted or thankful. So wise is put at the end of words that doesn't really match sometimes. So they take the root noun and they add wise to it. So if you've ever watched A Clockwork Orange, you know, the way those guys talk is very weird. Like they have like weird words that you don't understand. So I found out years later, after I learned how to speak Russian, that a lot of those words are Russian, and the way that the sentence structures are put together are direct translations from Russian text. So it's like the sentence is kind of out of order. So he's like, oh, I've got a pen in me Gulliver. That's Gulliva, which is the word for head in Russian. Or it's like, we're going to the Malakho bar. Malako is malako, which is like milk in Russian. Do you know? So it's like loads of phraseologies, right? So he says like, oh yeah, we're going topwise. It's like we're going above the thing in Clockwork Orange. So in Newspeak, if you wanted to say he ran quickly, ran, the past of ran, it goes from run, so it becomes runned, like R-U-N-N-E-D, right?
Yeah.
And the way they conjugate the verbs makes it sound like I ran, you ran, he ran. It's the same word for everything. So you don't have to think about like an irregularly conjugated verb. Again, reduce the need to think. So if you wanted to say he ran quickly, you would say in Newspeak, he runned plus speed-wise, because speed is quick. So you don't want to conjugate quick because it's irregular. So you just use speed.
Oh.
Like, it's not fucked up. And they talk like that all the time. Like, it's so easy to do that. It's like some Esperanto of stupid low-level thinking.
Well, but
think about how young people are talking today with each other, talking with text, talking with like misspellings.
Oh, dude, like, I mean, look at remember Ebonics? They're going to do Ebonics. I mean, it's just like everything is done to make it so it's harder for you to get into the system. And have a it's done like tats on the face.
Oh.
Where are you going with that job? You do two jobs: hardcore porn or tattooing. It's done on purpose, man. And you have these rappers who have money do this stuff, and these idiots.
Kids want it.
Yeah, guys. The book is 1984. Gordo, can you tell them where to find all your stuff?
Yeah, thoseconspiracyguys.com has everything. We're on all of the apps. There's 100+ episodes. They're about 4 or 5 hours long, and it goes deep dive into all this kind of stuff. Season 7 has stuff like Life on Mars. We got cannibalism. Last season we had Michael Jackson, Martin Luther King, all these celebrity assassinations. And it's more of a historical deep dive into those topics rather than just like belching out the facts. We look at stuff, analyze it, dig underneath, try and find out what's going on, and tie it all together in this big ecosystem of conspiracy
final theory. Thoughts it's from
because
you
because it's history, it's not conspiracy. Like, we just have to look at it a different way. The shit already happened, and we're living in something that we don't really appreciate or can't really understand, and we're going, why? The shit already happened. It's on paper. You just have to look at it in a different way.
How about the fact that they say Martin Luther King just sat there and watched his friend
that's on Daily Mail too.
You
think that's real?
Do you know what that is? That is Winston Smith punching up an article, and it comes down the tube, and he just puts a white tape over Martin Luther King's face, because that motherfucker is getting depersoned right now, 1984 style. They're looking back over all his good works and fucking deleting his good works from history.
You know what that does? That gets white people and black people fighting more. It gets just another thing to drive a wedge between us. And it's like, guess what you're not talking about? The fact that we're going into two more countries and we're about nine countries in war. We've always been in war, but we're up to nine countries, which is almost Hitler. Guess what? You're not talking about that because you're talking about whether Martin Luther King was a good man or enjoyed watching people get raped. You're not focusing on the thing. It's like, keep them stupid.
They did it to John Wayne. Same shit. Yeah. They try to change the airport. It's like, who cares? He's fucking dead. Let it be.
Deep person, people. Well, Gordo, we love you to death. We hope we're going to see you sooner than later in L.A. And
fingers crossed. You might see me in Europe before you see me in America. But if you're coming over this side, let me know.
I would love to see you, buddy. But, you're a G. We'll do this again very soon, bud.
Thanks very much for having me. And thoseconspiracyguys.com for all the tinfoil hatters.
You're the best. I appreciate you spending some time with us, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man.
Perfect. Thank you.